I've got a temporary life hack.
Temporary life hack?
Life hack that will last me for a little bit until I forget about it, about doing chores. So, of course, what's one way to get, you know, what's one way to get students to learn new things in a classroom that's usually fun?
Promise them stickers.
Promise them stickers as a reward for certain tasks, or maybe as a prize for an activity.
Wait, did I get it in one?
Kind of. No, not specifically, but like that's in the right area. So I gamified my chore, right?
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, well, what game are we playing? Am I playing recently? Oh, I don't know, Citizen Sleeper 2. And a Citizen Sleeper 2, and like, doesn't really have that many complex gaming systems in it, apart from the dice. So I'm like, but what does it do? It offers a story. So I have decided to turn my chores into false idolatry.
Boy, I feel like if it was 2014, we'd have an idea, a real idea for an app here.
So what I do is I was like, well, what's the kind of story? Like, what could I do? Who would be sort of a patron saint of doing chores around the house? And of course, the first thing that came to me was, say it with me, Dr.
Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, that's a good one too. But I said Dr. House MD.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
And now I do my chores and I think, man, my chores are an offering to Dr. House MD. They are a means for him to be supplied with Vicochore to cure his addiction, to treat his addiction.
So okay. It's
so
coming
that he
together.
Can treat his patients up in heaven.
The dots were a bit tenuous there for a sec, but I see what you're doing now.
I'm explaining how I got to where I got.
Got basically. It. Understood.
And yes, the dots are tenuous. They are always tenuous in my brain.
How's that working?
I did dishes and laundry today and took out trash and started packing for my move in a couple months.
Okay, hey.
And I did work. So some days I just, never mind, I'm cutting that out. I don't need that on the internet. And so yeah, I'm feeling good about it on day one. So
we'll see where we're at.
Check in next week to see if Dr. House MD is still the patron saint of doing chores. We'll see if what's the oncologist's name? Dr. Cully.
Cully's the lady.
Cully's the lady. I remember
Wilson.
Wilson. Yes. Yeah. So we'll see if Dr. Wilson tries to slow me down, which is a good thing actually. If I do too many chores, I get burnt out. So I may have to rely on Dr. Wilson at some point to pace myself, you know.
Let me know if you see like an apparition of him in your bedroom at night, standing at the foot of your bed, just like
that'd be nice,
telling you to cool it a bit.
I didn't see him, but I did see Cutthroat Bitch. This week, we recruit a bunch of ragtag, blue-haired hippie liberals to set sail into the stars.
Then in the back half of our show, we'll be discussing the film career of the New Wave French director Agnès Varda.
I don't like that. Diddle diddle, the cat on the griddle. Get down from there.
Oh my God. Every time.
Get down from there. I've told you 1,000 times. Welcome to Light Gaming, the lighthearted podcast about light video games. I am your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I, of course, am joined by the illustrious, real, and definitely here with me in the room right now, co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. We are talking about Citizen Sleeper 2, Starward Citizen. Starward Vector? Starward, what's it?
Starboard Vector, I think.
Starward Vector. We're talking about Citizen Sleeper 2, Starward Vector, the follow-up to Citizen Sleeper, period.
A game that you and I both quite enjoyed.
Really enjoyed. I got to it pretty late, but why don't you tell us about Citizen Sleeper 2, Starward Vector, and all its gooey details?
For sure. So Starward Vector is from the same studio and the same writer, pretty obviously. It's a very direct sequel. Like the first game, if you haven't played these, I would describe it as basically a visual novel, but with like a resource management system. So you are, it's sort of like you are, it's a survival narrative, and you are what is known as a sleeper, which is a human consciousness uploaded into an artificial body used for what is basically slave labor in sort of this far future, far flung human empire across the stars that has all these mining colonies everywhere. And like, you know, there are megacorps that run everything, but also a lot of this game is about how when the megacorps pull out of a system because they're done there, all the people who live there are just stuck to try and survive on the increasingly decaying infrastructure that's left behind. It's a lot of Blade Runner. It's a lot of like early cyberpunk stuff. I reread Neuromancer recently, and there's like more Neuromancer in here than you might think. And yeah, it's just like, it's a, they tend to be like really good, really atmospheric games about sort of carving out a life for yourself among hard conditions, meeting a wide cast of colorful characters and doing things with them, confronting high concept sci-fi premises like what if your brain could be a plant, and other things.
Do you think that somebody has to have played Citizen Sleeper 1 to enjoy Citizen Sleeper 2?
I would highly recommend it. I think that like this game assumes a base level of context with like some of the world building that I'm not going to say that like you could get through this game without it. It's not like there are critical plot points that you need to know, but a lot of stuff about sort of like how the world works and how characters navigate it, I think the game kind of assumes you have some familiarity with. And also that first game you can beat in like 7 hours. So,
and this game you could probably beat in maybe a 10 to 11.
10 to 11. I rolled credits on it this morning. I think
I rolled credits on it 10. This afternoon. I was... let's get into some of the nitty-gritty of the mechanics. You had mentioned some resource mechanics. The systems in this game involve primarily six-sided dice. You are able to make, with the help of your character sheet, you are able to make dice rolls to determine the outcome of certain actions across your different hubs. For instance, there's a stat called Endure, which is effectively like the strength stat if you're familiar with Dungeons and Dragons or Final Fantasy or whatever. I don't know, Final Fantasy VIII specifically. And if you have a lot of your Endure stat, you get +2 to whatever your dice rolls are. And your dice rolls function like divination rolls in Dungeons & Dragons. At the start of a session or a day or a cycle in this game, you are given set values among dice to assign wherever you so please. And I think that's probably the smartest thing that this game and the predecessor has done. It's like a stroke of genius. They were like, you know what everyone likes doing in Dungeons and Dragons? Divination Wizard. Let's just make a game about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of tabletop influences over both these games. Like, you know, the dice mechanics for sure. Also the idea of clocks, which are sort of like events running in the background that advance towards like a progress state every turn, which I know come from like indie tabletop RPGs, do a lot of stuff with those kind of mechanics.
Yeah, and this game builds on something in the previous game wherein if you were running too low on your stabilizer, you would start to lose dice.
Right, yeah. The way the corp controls your artificial body is they give you like, you know, good blood juice that you have to inject every few days.
This game eschews that system with the contrivance that your character has been modified as a robot to no longer needs stabilizer with certain caveats. The way, however, in which this game reduces your, like, adds stress to your character is with literal a stress meter, which I think is a little on the nose. I found it to be kind of corny, but what it does is if your system is more stressed out, eventually your dice sort of decay at a seemingly random rate. If they fail three stress checks, then your dice eventually break and need to be repaired.
So it's not random, actually. It's as the stress bar advances, you'll hit dice levels 1 through 6.
Yeah.
And once you're past that threshold, anytime you roll that number, that dice will take a point of damage. So like after you pass the 1 threshold, any future 1s you roll cause that dice to take a point of damage.
Oh, okay. Was that explained anywhere?
It was explained very briefly. It's a blink and you miss it type thing. Which, like,
this is a big criticism that I've heard other podcasts mention of this game too, is that the tutorialism is not tutorialing to the depth that needs to be tutorialed.
I The difficulty curve on this game is a little wonky, and like with the first game, I find that by the back half of this game, I was breezing through everything. Like, it was very easy to get on top of these systems. But man, the first time out, the first mission, I ended up having to restart because I guess picked the wrong character class, and the characters that it sent you out on the mission with, we all had negatives to everything, and I just kept rolling critical failures constantly, and then the ship blew up.
So let's talk about that. The other thing that this game is doing is giving you a crew system. You are now able to, rather than just be by yourself, but slowly sort of interact with people who exist in these hubs, you are able to recruit people onto your ship and take them out on contracts. And contracts are little condensed events where you have a determined amount of turns, depending on how many supplies you have. Sorry, I said five because you're probably going to want all your supplies maxed out, but you may not be afforded that luxury if a contract is forced upon you. You take two characters, and then those characters have their own dice rolls, and those characters have their own skills, but they will have either just one skill with a plus next to it or two of the five skills max. And frankly, some of the early missions, just some of the characters that you're forced with are not suited for the checks, which is probably on purpose. It can be really frustrating, and then you're supposed to fail and try and get through it.
I love Junie as a character, but anytime I brought her on a mission, I like two turns in, I was like, this was a mistake.
Oh no, I absolutely needed her a lot of the time because, I quite enjoyed having her on my team quite frequently because, and this is to the game's credit, due to the character builder system. You are given a choice of one of three classes, and they all have various different strengths and weaknesses and certain stats, and one of the stats is completely off limits to you. You can't even put points into it ever, depending on the class you are in. And while Junie's a character who is good with the interfacing, she's kind of this computer whiz, so she is good with computers, and my character was not. Granted, it wasn't the stat I couldn't put in, but three of the other four I was pretty good at, and she was really valuable to me. For me, though, I went with the strength character, and oh my god, everyone else
had strength.
Has that. Eugene has it. Femi has it. Seraphine has it. Like, these are all names. Like, these are all names of various crew members that you accrue, and they're just like, there's so many people.
That there's no cap on it, by the way. I like that it's never like, oh, you can't recruit this person, you've got too many folks already. It's like, no, you can keep adding to the list. You can
I'll tell you what I don't like about it. I don't like that this ship ends up being sort of a clown car by the end of the game.
Yeah,
and
fair.
There's no reason to turn these people away, even though you have the option to.
Okay,
and
yes.
And there's no cost associated with supplies. The only crew member there's only one crew member that costs you supplies, and it's not somebody you can take on your contract. I'll say that much. So it's like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you just get more resources because they're on your ship and they cost you nothing. Like, okay. What is that? That's not
I do have
works.
Some thoughts springboarding off of that, but I think they'll save them for the narrative section, because like, they have to do more with like the general way that characters interact in this game.
Yeah, for sure. It I would say that also because of the clown car nature of it, like it feels a little Octopathy in derogatory, like Octopath Traveler 1, where you just have these characters and they all maybe chime in once in a while once you bring them on a mission, but when their stories are done, they're just sort of out of the way.
I do want to say, before we get too much further, because I think that we're probably like, you know, going to dig into like various things that we found like a little frustrating, or things that we felt like the game didn't quite live up to its potential and stuff like that, I did overall quite enjoy my time with this. I think like Citizen Sleeper as a whole, like the quality bar for the writing is still quite high, and there are moments in this game that really sung in a way that, like, you know, that were better than narrative moments I've played in like any other game recently. I think that there are like various ways in which the game doesn't quite come together for me. Although if this ends up being chapter 2 of 3, I think it could be a very good middle chapter if they end up like sort of like
maybe middle chapter, but also middle chapter derogatory. I thought this was a marked step down from Citizen Sleeper 1 for me. I enjoyed myself enough to finish it, but I left it feeling a bit disappointed and frustrated, whereas Citizen Sleeper 1 was stressful. This game, yeah, there's a difference between stress and frustration, and the frustration in me comes from not being able to recover your dice damage unless that dice is completely broken.
Oh,
there's no way in which to do that. dumb. What the fuck? it's just annoying. And I had a plethora of resources. I would have happily been satisfied to spend them to try and not have to do that. And that deterred me from ever using my push mechanic. And so a push is another mechanic on top of this. So now if you're feeling a little confused and overwhelmed at the layers and layers of systems that there are in this game, I'm right there with you, bud. It very much detracted from me enjoying the writing, having to kind of navigate through this game's resource management.
Right,
push is a... I'm not done explaining push. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I'm going to do that, and then you can... And then you may speak. The push is when you bring your crew, sometimes your crew roll like shit. They only get two dice, and push is a way to... For me, actually, maybe your push was different, but I was... since I was the brute guy, I chose... I was like, oh, crew's a new mechanic. I chose this, and in my push, what it did was it allowed the dice allowed the dice of the crew members to be upgraded by two or three, depending on how hard I invested in. Which class did you choose?
I chose the engineer. My push would re-roll the lowest of my dice.
Okay, wow, that's pretty cool too. But push is like a one-time thing, it's a thing you do at the cost of some stress to make some of your dice somewhere on the contract better. What were you going to say?
What I was
going
to say was, I think the game did not quite do a great job of communicating to me how everything was balanced together, such that if I felt more comfortable that I had a sense of what the consequences for failure were, or how things might continue if missions failed and stuff like that, I might have been more comfortable playing around with it a bit, doing the push a bit more often, because the push drives up your stress, it's like a risk reward type thing. But I often would end up just playing super conservatively because I wasn't sure what the risk was and I wasn't really sure what
did
the reward was.
Did you ever fail in Citizen Sleeper 1?
Fail?
Yeah, did you ever fail a drive? A long mission, then you just weren't able to do the resources or put the time into it to complete the drive in time.
Oh, one of them, I think, but I don't remember which
too.
One.
I failed a couple in Citizen Sleeper 1, and so I knew that failure was possible. And I did fail in one of the early missions in the Hex.
Yeah,
the Hex Gate or whatever. And the story did move on, but I don't feel like. So this is a high comparison point, but compared to something like Disco Elysium, where when you fail, it's either really, really, really funny or very consequential, but still moves you in a direction that you didn't expect necessarily. I feel like failure in Citizen Sleeper 1 and 2 is actually not that satisfying. Even compared to Baldur's Gate 3 as well, where failure, save scumming is rampant, but there were still times in that game where failure was still really either funny or profound or had really good, really satisfying consequences. Failure in this game for me was just oh, we failed. Well, I guess we have to accept that and move on. And it's
One exception here is I did fail one side mission in this.
Yeah.
And it actually ended up feeling extremely satisfying.
Oh,
without
really?
Going into too many details, Eugene's plotline?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I could see some interesting failures there.
At the very end, because that gets so chaotic and there are so many parties involved, the failure felt like, oh, yeah, man, it just broke bad. There was no way out of that. We just had to cut and run.
That was probably one of my favorite side stories as well.
Yes.
And we'll say a little bit, not too much more about it, but.
Yes, but definitely. The failure there felt a chaotic situation got out of control and we had to make a choice to kind of exit rather than try to keep doing this.
But even that to me, a failure doesn't feel like failure, but every scenario is failure. Whereas I'm talking about you're on a mission, right? You're on a mission and you get kind of cucked by your rolls and you end up running out of dice or running out of supply. You're running out of supplies, your stress goes up. Or the dice happen, or you're not able to stop an alarm from going off, and maybe a ship disintegrates or something like that. That kind of thing where it's just either you succeed or you fail, and it's not that interesting, and you just have to accept it and move on. And there were I felt there were no consequences of my early game failures throughout the rest of the game.
Because I get what they're going for here, right?
Yeah.
Like, the idea is supposed to be that if the dice mechanic is, like, the central axis on which all the gameplay stuff spins, what's supposed to be happening is the push-pull of, like, okay, if you get a bad hand of dice for a turn, then you have to decide if it's if you're okay basically burning a bunch of those dice for the turn and losing, like, you know, a whole cycle, or if you want to try and spend those dice or do things with them, like push them, etc. But it just, it never quite came together for, like, either it was way too tilted against me in the front half of the game, and I often felt like I was just in a bad position, and then I got to the back half of the game and it was tilted the other way and I had no problem just being like, oh, four of these dice suck.
There wasn't really a balance at which point I felt like I was making meaningful decisions, and at that point I turned the game into easy and just got the rest of the story done. And I was really, really grateful for that accessibility setting. I would honestly recommend just playing this game on easy so that you can experience the writing, the art, and the universe. And then maybe going back, if you want to try to challenge it and game the system, you can. There is certainly, like, once you know, like, the game's only difficult part is in not knowing what's coming.
Yeah.
There's just a couple of contracts that get forced upon you at some points where you may not have a lot of supplies, and then you might fail those missions as well. And you just have to, you can either accept it or fucking start over because the game's not that long. And I think one thing that this game is missing that I really loved in Citizen Sleeper 1 was the hacking
side
of things. And yeah, sure, there's the hacking stat, but like the hacking in Citizen Sleeper 1 was a great way to use your low rolls. This game had absolutely no way low rolls.
That's the thing. I often had like one dice and two dice that I was just like, okay, I don't have a use for these.
Yeah, and this game has a system that how many systems does this game have? There's another system wherein once you do repair your dice, you are met with glitches, and the glitch dice, I liked this glitch dice system.
Yeah.
And I wish I had just kept one of the permanent glitches around, because it was like, well, I have no intuition skill, but this glitch dice has a flat 20% chance to succeed, 80% chance to be a total disaster. This is already going to be a disaster either way because I have a fucking one left. I may as well just use this glitch dice to do that. And I thought the glitch dice was a really cool system, and maybe there was more there to explore as well. I don't know. Because I, at this point, I've made it clear that I think this game is a little overloaded with just stuff that doesn't necessarily gel together in a way that's super satisfying mechanically. If I were to take one thing out, it would definitely be like the three little pips that each dice have. Either a dice,
oh, the health bars.
A dice should just probably, like, you should, once you have a, I don't know, because like
just have them break and then balance the resource economy around the dice being broken,
or
unbroken.
And then maybe let you, like, because you could fix them on a mission if they break. If you have the shitty scrap one, then you have the extra glitches and stuff, right? So I think just making it so that's cycling more, because I was just often in these states where I had my half broken dice for like five chapters and just being like, all right, well, like, again, highly disincentivized from pressing or giving myself any stress or engaging with the rest of the systems and resources I have.
I think that provides a pretty comprehensive overview of the mechanics, which is like also like not really where the meat of this game is, right? The meat of this game is in the narrative stuff.
Yeah, and unfortunately the frustration made me skip a lot of the narrative in the mid-game.
Oh, no.
And I was just like, wait, oh shit, I'm not like playing this game, so I'm gonna have to go back and like, because I was just like, fuck, get me back to where I was, and I don't know. I'm not the best when it comes to creating images in my mind's eye once I see words on a page. So that's why what I loved about Citizen Sleeper was that it made reading fun. And this game did not succeed at that level for me, even if the writing is, as everyone said, every other podcast says, much better and more gripping. I didn't feel that way. I don't know that the memory, the amnesia trope pays off for me.
No, but like it doesn't, it falls out of the story for so long.
Yeah.
And like only comes up intermittently. So here's the thing. I think that like I have some personal frustrations with some of, like, you know, the way, like, the narrative stuff is handled generally, but I want to say two very positive things up front, right? The first is that just, like, the way that the world building coheres in both of these games is still incredibly strong.
Wow,
because it really is about sort of, like, it is about what survival looks like and how that really requires community and interdependence. It involves complex systems. It involves people finding ways to sort of, like, you know, solve logistical challenges and, like, and eke out, like, a living literally on rusted hulks floating in space around, like, you know, an asteroid belt, basically. And I think the game continues to do a really good job of driving home what some of, like, the realities of, like, being, I don't know, a fourth generation person living in that environment, a fifth generation, like, of having, like, a history and a culture of, like, of living in these conditions. I don't think I've ever played a game that quite does something to that level as well as these games do. And it continues to really be quite effective in this game.
Maybe some of my expectations were too high, but upon seeing the trailer for this game, I was also expecting animation and voiceover at some points.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I was expecting too much for that, but I just had the idea that, like, oh, okay, they were really successful at Citizen Sleeper 1 and now they've brought in a bunch of other resources to really make this world come to life. And while the art, the still drawings are a step up from Citizen Sleeper 1, and the art in general, the modeling is a little bit, it's a little bit more clear what everything is supposed to be in the world and who and how people are existing in this, like, zero gravity space all the time is really conveyed well within the art. I wanted more than that at this point in this sequel. After such time, I think that would have been a worthwhile investment for Citizen Sleeper 2. But we'll see what their next game holds, if it's a Citizen Sleeper 3 or if they decide to do DLC. I'm not sure about that. There's some stuff from the first DLC that I'm still a bit like the first game's DLC that I'm still a bit confused about, that I was hoping would be resolved. Maybe I missed it. You guys will have to play this game and let us know in our Discord, which is of course linked in the link pop in the description of the episode, along with all our other social media, which are now set up. Do you have anything else you want to say about Citizen Sleeper 2 Starward Vector before we move on?
I just want to say if I think that the world building is really incredible in the incredible in the narrative sense, I found myself frustrated with a lot of the character stuff in this game in a very specific way that I did want to make sure I talked about a bit on this podcast, which is that, like, I found it frustrating the degree to which, with the exception of kind of the main bad guy who is very obviously bad, everyone else is sort of like just, they're all good people who are agreeable, and no one really gets into, like, significant conflicts over differences of belief that have, like, long-term consequences or cause, like, rifts to, like, everyone's sort of trustworthy. There's a point where someone who appears to have, like, be working for the enemy gang, and then she tracks you down and like, no, actually, it's totally cool. I'm a mole inside them. I'm on your side secretly. And you're just like, I believe you. And it's like, I don't know that I believe her. She just told us that. Did she give us any proof?
Yeah, this game has, for the most part, really sanitized my distrust of anything. Really scrubbed that out. Even though it tries the prose tries to dissuade me and give me the option to not bring people along or not trust them or be like, you're a gruff silent person. I just felt like my dialogue choices, by and large, for the most part in this game, even with the, like, skill checks in the middle of dialogues, I just felt like none of it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
Where in Citizen Sleeper 1, I felt like lot of that mattered.
None of it mattered, and none of it, like, felt like very much like I was expressing myself to characters who were going to, like, react even in dialogue that much, other than, like, you're right, Sleeper, we should do that, or I don't agree, Sleeper, but I understand your decision.
Yeah.
Like, and again, like,
that's it. You got it. You nailed it.
And again, like, I do get from like almost like a genre perspective what they're going for here, which is to juxtapose the harshness of the environment and the world and everything against sort of an idea that like a very optimistic and hopeful idea that like fundamentally, like, you know, especially in harsh conditions, people are able to come together and do incredible things. And like, you know, that is meant to be part of what is uplifting about this game, is that people can come together and accomplish things. But it ends up feeling a little bit sort of like, I don't know. It feels a little bit like people, like,
it's very kumbaya.
Yeah. People not having disagreements also kind of undercuts the sense that they have any real convictions, right? Because with conviction, you get disagreement.
Yeah. And I did not feel nearly as hunted and vulnerable in this game as I did in Citizen Sleeper 1. And it had very little to do with the people I was with. It had everything to do with, not caring as much
okay.
about the villain.
But with all that said, who was your favorite character / crew member?
The Overseer.
The Overseer? Yeah, Overseer's pretty great.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that because I also like the Gardener. I like the AI in this game, and it there's a lot less of it in Citizen Sleeper 2. So I liked it, though. I'm disappointed because I liked it and I wanted to love it.
Yes. My favorite character, I think, was Bliss. I think Bliss was great.
Yeah, Bliss is back.
Mm-hmm. Bliss
we'll
is back.
We'll spoil that one.
Yeah, Bliss is back, and Bliss has moved to like a different kind of phase of their life.
Yeah.
And the conversation the two of you have about that is one of those high points in the game for me.
Sure. Yeah, I took them along, and they had the repair skill and what the... it was either intuition or interface. I think it was intuition. Yeah, so I took them along because, again, I had no intuition, and then I didn't invest in repair or engineering until much later. So they were super, super valuable crew member. I had them with Junie for a while, and then them with, I took the girl. What's her name? Nia?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I took her because, again, I needed intuition.
Oh, see, I ended up recruiting her brother after that whole thing.
I thought her brother was really attractive, and I wanted to, but I didn't need another fucking endurance crew member. I'm like, please, I'm good. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of endurance checks. Sorry, strategy spoilers. Having high endurance, a good idea.
Best thing about Bliss also, though, now that they've grown their hair out, they look just like me.
They do not. Don't fucking flatter yourself.
Yeah, okay, I wish.
Oh, boy. Well, it's that time again where we must succumb to the capitalist machine. So we are going to go walk our leopards while the ads play, and then we'll be right back with more Light Gaming.
We're gonna read some ads.
Do you ever wonder what it would be like to be a football superstar?
Boy, gee, Billy, I do.
Do you happen to have $3 billion in a trust fund somewhere?
Well, my father invented the paperclip, so I do.
Well, that's convenient, because you are just the right person to be able to buy the Backbone Overmind MVP!
A new product from Backbone?
It's a new product from Backbone. Super Bowl licks may have just passed, but you can get your own Backbone Overmind MVP installed over the next 10 months, just in time for the next Super Bowl.
That's incredible. I could be coming out first of the year, all ready to join with, I'm going to guess, probably... You know what? I'm going to say it. I could join the Bears, who I'm sure are going to be in the finals next year.
That's a salient prediction that will almost certainly come true.
It's got to happen once, right?
Yes. And if you remember the highlights from Super Bowl licks, now you can Hurts alongside Jalen Hurts when he gets tackled. What is Jalen Hurts' position? Is he a wide receiver? Oh.
No, he's a running back.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure his back hurts when he's running from the ball. Wait, he was on the winning team. When he catches the ball and runs it to the touchdown. That's what those do, right, Claude?
I'm really more of a basketball guy, but I think so.
Now you can feel the pain from back to back to back sacks that Mahomes felt, losing the Chiefs yard after yard after yard. And the shame.
So it's like a haptic feedback exoskeleton that makes me better at football?
That's part of it. but it also makes you highly empathetic to the point of feeling every football player's emotions all at once.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. So it's sort of like in Space Jam, except it's like if all the basketball players got dumped into one little alien.
That's exactly right. Now you, during the halftime show, can feel the pleasure that Travis Kelce felt getting rimmed by Taylor Swift.
Hmm. I have fantasized about that.
Was really not expecting the That one kind of caught me off guard, but I'm happy to hear it. Well, you can book your appointment with all your neurology specialists to get your backbone over mind MVP installed today.
I'm going to go talk to my local surgeon about it right now.
That's right, Claude. Every 11-year-old has their own personal surgeon.
My family does. His name is Mr. Jacobs. He helped fix my ankles.
That's what trust funds are for.
Dr. Jacobs. He'd be Dr. Jacobs.
Mr. Jacobs. He's not a real doctor. We are back with Light Gaming. We have just finished walking our leopards. Hey, turns out the leopards did eat our faces.
They did. It hurts a lot.
It's a shame. We chose the leopards.
I don't know. I didn't choose these leopards.
No, these leopards were chosen for us, and I wish they weren't chosen, but you know what? We had to walk them anyway.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. That's
Leopard or not, we are committed to bringing entertaining content to you, and we have a returning guest from the days of yore.
Ooh, who do we got?
Somebody who has a lot of legal prowess.
Oh, no.
In the courtroom.
Oh my, he's coming here?
He's coming here.
Right
he's
now?
He's booked, and he is very blessed. Everyone, please give a warm welcome to Judge Valthry.
God damn it. Okay.
Judge Valthry.
Hello!
Hey, Valthry.
Hello, it is I, Judge Valthry.
It's good to see you again.
It is good to see you as well. Allergy? Was that your name?
Allergy, yeah, that's it.
Allergy, that's right. It's good to see you.
Allergene, it's like it's an old French name.
Oh, Allergene, that's very fetching. Very fetching name. I am told you have some listeners who have questions that need judgment.
We do, yes. We actually had a few different write-ins on this.
Okay,
because we prepared the segment in advance.
Yes, we did. That's what I was told. Is that right, Rum?
Yes. Okay, so it's good to see you as well. Thank you for acknowledging me alongside Allergy. And first we got this question from Jenna in Wisconsin. She writes, hello, Jenna. Thank you for writing in. She writes, Judge Valthry, would you rather eat 20 Twix or cleanse the world of sin?
That's a good one, actually.
Oh, boy, do I'd rather eat 20 Twix bars. No, I guess, is that 20 individual Twix bars or 20 Twix packages of the
I think
the
packages,
two?
Right?
That's packages. Let's go with the packages. You could write in again, Jenna. Thank you for writing.
It's like 40
if
bars.
If we're mistaken. Yeah, so 40 of those delicious caramel cookie chocolate confections that I get to put down my gullet. Oh, that sounds utterly tantalizing. Or cleanse the world of sin. Now, that's a very open-ended...
I also had questions about this.
Very open-ended sort of interpretation. So which sins are we... all the sins, and who is, of course, judging the sins? It's a very complex system, it's all depending on the theology you're going for. So I really have
or
to
theory
weigh...
of justice.
Yes, I have to really weigh the... weigh the options here. Again, those cookies are so delectable, but it would be nice if we all just sort of behaved ourselves and didn't really stray from the natural order of things, right? Doing so. So it's a bit of a give or take. I think I'm going to go with cleanse the world of sin.
Damn, you know, I started the question, I was with you on that, and then as we talked about it, I was actually like, I would take the Twix.
Oh, for goodness gracious, how selfish you are. No. I, Judge Valthry, am, of course, righteous and willing to sacrifice those 40 delicious caramel chocolate cookie, shortbread cookie confections to make it such that the world was heaven on earth. Thank you so much, Jenny? Janae?
From Wisconsin.
From Wisconsin. Well, I guess that will be the first place cleansed. Once all the sin is gone. Do you get it? Do you go, sin is in the name?
Oh, yeah, no, I got, yeah, okay.
Oh, good thing I stopped and asked if you got it, because
it's funny. It's
like
funny.
You
no, you explained the joke, and that made it funny.
Good, that's how that usually works.
Okay, so I've got to write in here. I have another one, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, so this one comes from Bartholomew. He is up in Maine. He actually, oh, okay, so this is actual...
Barthandalus, that's a good friend of mine.
Yeah? I'll tell him.
Very good about maintaining world order and cleanse.
Yeah?
Yes, he was a judge before me. Actually, was he a judge, or was he just sort of the overworld of all the foul sea? It's anyway, sorry, I digress.
Anyway, Bartholomew, okay, we have an actual legal case he's asking for help on. He apparently is going to court. He's got a court date in a couple of weeks here.
Ooh,
yeah, so kind of a civil matter, but he's trying to, I think, maybe even go for criminal liability. Bartholomew says, hey, I was walking in the park the other day, I think the date here actually is now a week and a half ago, and it just had been like a recent sort of like, you know, cold snap. There was ice everywhere on the ground, and in particular, there was in fact it was a Twix wrapper. There was a Twix wrapper, yeah, on the ground, and
Kismet.
It had, and then the ice had frozen over it, and the way that the ice had frozen onto the foil interior of the wrapper had rendered it incredibly slick, far more slick than the surrounding ground. Mm. And so when Bartholomew was walking, someone had discarded the Twix wrapper, and he slipped and fell and twisted his ankle quite badly and ended up in the hospital. He's no broken bones, but he's on a splint right now, and it looks here like they believe his lawyer advised him that they think they can go after the Nestle Corporation for possibly $15.5 million.
Okay,
so I think the question here is, what relevant case law do you think they should be working to cite in this case?
Well, what relevant case law? Granted, I am a judge and not necessarily a lawyer. However, I think there is an angle for reckless endangerment. It is a what these we all know that Nestle is the proprietor of these delicious cookie, caramel, shortbread, chocolate confections that we all love and know as Twix.
Sorry,
and their wrappers.
Twix are made by Mars Inc., not Nestle.
You lied to me, Barthandalus! How very dare you!
I knew we were going
to... I'm going to judge you by throwing you off the balcony!
He's not here. I just have... It's on my...
I sentence you to one balcony dive!
Okay, I'll pass it along to him.
Yes! You question, think case dismissed!
Okay, Bartholomew, Judge Vowthry, thanks for getting the defendant wrong. You should jump off the nearest balcony of what, at least 15 feet in height?
Yes, that's, I think, a good good height. That's okay. A fair height.
At least 15 feet in height.
Yes, fantastic. I think that thou shalt learn thineth lesson.
But if he doesn't have a broken ankle already, he might after that.
That splint's going to be doubled. Well, he should have thought of that before he lied to me. Judge Vowthry.
Do we have any other write-ins this week?
No write-ins, but I did want to ask you, Your Honor, what did you think of the latest season of Severance?
Oh,
I'm so curious about this.
Oh, I am such an Adam Scott fan.
He's really incredible, right? Like, incredible. What a surprising range.
What a surprising range. Parks and Rec, the Cones of Dunshire to this, the Severance, in his role as Jeff.
Mark S.
Mark S, that's correct. S for Severance. Of course I remember that now, yes. And I think it's just... such a fabulous season. I really love how in the second season they continued what they were setting up for at the end of the first season. I thought that was quite satisfying.
Okay, but I think we can all agree, like, John Turturro, increasingly the secret of the show. Incredible stuff in this latest episode.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I really liked when he...
He shouted, yes, do it, Seth!
Yes, Seth, for which is also S for severance.
Yes, lots of S's in this show.
Lots of S's symbolism in this show.
Okay, I have a theory about this, actually. Have you seen my Reddit post about this? If you take
Reddit
all...
is a cesspool of sin! I would never be on Reddit!
But hear me out. If you take all the characters who have an S anywhere in their name, yes, and you arrange them in height from tallest to shortest,
okay,
it's very clear that, like, their eye colors repeat on, like, a loop of, like, brown, blue, green, brown, blue, green, which, ooh, I think, which is, like, it's also kind of the colors of, like, the office floor, right? Like, you know, if you put, like, a polarization filter.
Or kind of like the colors of, like, the pixels on TVs, except it's red, green, blue instead of brown, blue, green.
So right, it's close, right?
It's kind of close.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
there's something there. And of course, Severance is on TV.
Exactly. Yes, you get it. Okay.
So there's something going on there.
Everyone else said I was crazy, but I know I'm onto something.
No. But Reddit is a cesspool of sin. Delete your account immediately.
Boy, it's really compelling when you put it like that. I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, just like, it's under settings.
Well, that's all the time that you have paid me for today, so I must be off. Thank you very much, Alan Jean. Was that it?
Yep, Alan Jean, that's me.
And Cherry. Cherry? Yeah, Cherry. I'll be Cherry.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Judge Valthry. I really appreciate you stopping by. Thank you very much. Yeah, you're, yep. He's floating away with his little tiny wings. Off the balcony he goes. Oh, he must not think. Okay, wow. You know, he's surprisingly light for his size.
He's fun to have around. He's a bit of an overbearing presence, but I forgot. He's fun to, you know, shoot the shit with.
Yeah, I think the same as well. I really, really appreciate that. So, you know, of course, if you guys have any questions you would like Judge Valthry to answer, you can write them in to us directly by joining our Discord. I mentioned it before and I'll mention it again. It is in the link of the description of the episode as well as all our other socials. Speaking of plugs, another thing I'd like to plug, some of my little personal project. I'm still working on that Crimson Diamond playthrough, baby. You have that look on your face, which betrays to me that you have still not seen
Nope.
it. It'll be there when you want it. You know, it's okay now, for now. But I'm enjoying my time with that. And I was thinking, I don't know, you guys can let me know what you want to play. I was thinking maybe I'd do a second playthrough of this game of Citizen Sleeper 2 at some point to practice my voice acting. Why not? And maybe I'll like it more the second time around. I'm not going to get rid of it. Anyway, that's enough of myself proselytizing. Do you have anything you want to plug while you're here?
People should watch Severance. That show is really good.
Okay, a much needed plug for Apple TV's Severance too. that's fantastic. Well, without much further ado, I would like to thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Light Gaming. Next week, we are talking Nancy Drew. We are talking which Nancy Drew again?
I believe we're doing The Secret of Shadow Ranch.
The Secret of Shadow
Ranch. Long awaited.
Much to my chagrin, I am much more partial to The Secret of Shadow Blue Cheese, but what can you do? We are, of course, going to talk Nancy Drew next week. Looking forward to it. I have been your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I have been joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodnight to the gamers of Light.
Good evening.